But anyway.
Back to Miss Hale's class. Take me back.
It was Miss Hale's class, and it was Christmas. And I only remember that because, I don't know if I should say a name.
Don't.
I'm
gonna... You just say a name.
Do you remember him? He... We had to learn Christmas songs in Spanish, and his family wouldn't let him do it because it's against their religion or something. It was like Catholic or something. I don't know, but he couldn't do it. And Miss Hale was like, okay, you have to do something else. And she was pissed. But I remember because we had to sing songs, and I would like get up in the mic and like fucking whisper it because I didn't want anyone to hear me say stuff wrong.
Aww. So it's like...
It was about fish.
We wish you a Merry Christmas.
I don't... No, it was in Spanish. There was one song about a fish in a river, and the other one was La Bamba.
Oh, remember whenever we had to, like... I was in Miss Hale's class, too, and we had to, like, memorize La Bamba. And I just remember being like, Soy Capitan... Soy Capitan.
You would like say it into
La La Bamba. Fa la 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 bamba. And she just wrote like zero. Like
That's yeah, that sounds right.
Probably should take some names out of this. Sorry, Miss Hale.
That's fine. She's cool.
She's cool as fuck.
Yeah, I don't think she'd give a fuck.
Anyway, so this is a podcast about true crime.
Definitely not about Spanish class like 4 years ago.
Yeah, damn. We're old. I almost took a drink of my drink again.
I know, it's sitting right there and I want it.
You guys know that when you're podcasting, you gotta eat a dry biscuit. And I'm not talking about a good biscuit. I forgot Girl Scout cookies. I know. I was like, went on a hunt and I can't find, they're all selling them online. I don't wait. Anyway, this is our podcast. And this podcast is called Corn on Macabre. I'm Alexa.
I'm Harlow.
And I hope you don't have a hard time distinguishing our voices.
I sound like this.
And I sound like this. But I don't always talk like that.
Yeah, I know. I noticed the thing when I talk is I still talk really high. Like, I do. But if I don't want to, I can, like, I don't know. I can't do it right now because I'm hearing myself.
I don't think you talk high at all.
I do.
Oh. I've never noticed.
I don't know, man. Oh. Anyway.
Our voices are not the same. That was the joke.
It's... Guys, when you hear yourself talking back at you in a loop, you want to die.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah. It's kind of funny, though. I enjoy it.
Harlow and I have been kind of collaborating on this project for a long time, and after one failed double recording, we're coming back at this again, live from my closet. Or should I say pre-recorded from my closet?
It's live now.
Live now. Live to us. We get the true experience. And it's not a good one.
This is... No. This is a genuine experience. I want to describe my surroundings right now. Well, they're not burning now, but there's three candles.
It smelled like burnt hair in my closet.
There's three candles. Is that Jim Morrison?
That is Jim Morrison. It's all a right. Framed photo. My mom had it when she was in high school.
It's very large, and he has wonderful hair. There's a dude on a toilet.
That's Polnareff, and Harlow hasn't watched JoJo's Bizarre Adventure and LARPs, so that doesn't make any sense.
My life is backwards.
It is. You're just skipping from one nerddom to a different one, which I accept, but
as when my friends question. Hear this, they all LARP. And have seen JoJo.
See, that's that you would watch JoJo, and then you would LARP.
They're gonna bully me.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah, I
love them.
Harlow is sitting in a cave of my clothes. We've been collaborating on this podcast for like a while now. Harlow's laughing at me because I can't speak. and we totally tried to record with one mic in like a fucking. Downstairs garage, and it wasn't
good.
In the dark. We at least have a pretty nice little lamp in here. And a vent.
This is an improvement already.
It is. It's nice. I feel like we're in a whole new level of our friendship with microphones in our face.
This is the next level. If you want to be even better friends, just shove a mic in each other's face and make smacking noises with boba tea.
Oh, yeah. Harlow brought boba tea to me, and I was like, oh, fuck. And we're both, like, in our microphones. I won't make the sound for you, making some disgusting sounds. It was fantastic. I think we're going to get the Streamy Award. Is that what podcasters get? We're going to get an Oscar. They're just going to jump straight to Oscar.
Yeah, we're just real good.
So anyway, this podcast, I guess I should tell you the name of it, is called Corn on the Cob.
I think we said that.
Did we? Fuck, I keep on forgetting.
We keep going off topic, so it's fine.
Yeah, this is going to... We didn't want to be able to be like this. So I guess I'm going to kind of get started here. I wanted to... Harlan and I talked about this, and we wanted to bring local cases, because we know that local people are probably going to be listening to our podcast first, and we feel like you guys should be as woke as we are, if you will. And so I wanted to start out with a case from Coppell, Texas, which I forgot how far away that was from us, but I think it's an hour from where we're recording right now, which is in Dallas.
I know I've heard this story before, but I still fucking hate Coppell.
I know. Isn't it weird that we're in Texas and we call it Coppell?
No one does.
All right.
I feel like if you live there, it's Coppell.
Coppell.
Campbell.
I know. My mom, I was like, don't you think it should be Coppell? My mom was like, no.
I love her.
All right. So we're going to jump right into this. On July 12th, 2010, around 6 a.m., Corinne Peters was packing up her brand new 2011 Hyundai Sonata, about to set out to her first choice of college, which was UT Austin. Hook 'em. Is that what they say?
Sure. I thought, what? Which one's Gig'em?
That's A&M.
Oh, shit.
Oh, they're going to be mad. We're already there's already a discourse. I can't drink this. she was about to head out for her freshman orientation, and she was excited to finally make the near 4-hour trip, because her plans kept getting canceled because her mom, Jane Peters, she's also the Coppell town mayor, kept getting, like, medical issues, and she vented to friends about being frustrated for missing an earlier orientation, as her mom awaited results from MD Anderson Cancer Center. So, Corinne was planning on majoring in health science at UT Austin, and friends have also mentioned that she expressed interest in psychiatric nursing as well. Corinne was also very depressed. Like, so her dad died from cancer in 2008, so just 2 years before this.
Okay.
And her loved ones mentioned that she was, like, having a super hard time with it, which I've lost my dad. You've lost your dad. We've had different relationships with our fathers. I lost my dad when I was 10, and I was a little too young to kind of understand the severity of it. And I also lost him suddenly. And so I know that you lost your father to an illness. And I think that whenever we had initially talked about this, you mentioned that Ethan had a hard time dealing with.
He was a lot closer. He lived with him for a while. I don't know if it was like a year or something, but he lived with my dad, took it real hard. You know, he's like, I think the other day he mentioned he went, I don't know if it was therapy or just a doctor, but he's getting medication and stuff. And, like, that's good. You need to, like, I mean, finding your own ways to cope is good, sure, but medication is real good for you.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, yeah, I'm good for her, at least talking to people.
Yeah, and mentioning and, like, kind of bringing up the issue that she's been having. So, like, you know, on top of, like, her dad dying of cancer 2 years ago, her mom's been awaiting results that from his cancer center, and, like, she's, I mean, there's a lot of shit going on in this girl's life, and the only thing she's got going is she's like, hell yeah, I'm about to go out to college, and I'm so excited. I've seen in a couple of articles that Corinne was a dancer, and I think she was on the drill team. I'm going by a picture I found on CBS. I can't find a whole lot written about her, which is really hard. I wish I could tell you more about Corinne, but the city of Coppell seems to want to put this whole tragedy underneath the rug and in the past, and so I just can't find anything personal about her. So I'm going to get into a timeline here of the crime. About 30 minutes after Corinne was seen loading her car for the trek ahead of her, neighbors noticed that Corinne's mother, Jane, was unloading her car. And when a neighbor asked how she was doing, they're just like, hey, what's up, Jane? And Jane was like, exactly like that, 6 a.m. going, hey, yo, Jane.
Hey, yo, Jane.
What's cooking? And she was like, I'm good. And she didn't even answer their question. She just said good. And okay. She was seen again in the backyard around 10 a.m. taking the dogs out. And then around noon, the mayor was seen walking down a busy street looking uncharacteristically disheveled, which I hear in, like, every ID description of, like, whenever some shit's going down. Disheveled. I'm uncharacteristically disheveled. My French tuck is a full untuck.
Tan France is, like, screaming.
Harlow's dying.
That was good.
Oh, man.
Okay.
That was the last time that Jane Peters was seen alive, was walking down. The road that she was walking down was, mm-hmm. like, a super busy road. I think it was, like, McCarty Boulevard.
Yeah, I remember we talked about this last time. My friend lives over in that neighborhood, and I was there not too long ago. It's, like, fucking nice-ass apartment, nice houses, like, shady fuckers will, like, get seen and then probably immediately have the cops called on them. Like, that's how it is over there.
Yeah, and, like, this is a really, really busy, like, residential mm-hmm. street. Like, I think it would be considered, like, a suburban street, but, like, it's crazy busy. So, the police were called to the mayor's $400,000 home around 7:45 p.m. on July 13th. So this is a full day after Corinne was seen loading her car up. Okay. When people grew concerned that Jane didn't show to a regularly scheduled city council meeting. On the door, there was an envelope taped to it, the door, and it contained a key and a typed note that read, "To our first responders, here's the key to the front door. I am so very sorry for what you're about to discover. Please forgive me, Jane." And inside, the police saw another note on the kitchen island next to Jane's husband's ashes and Corinne's dad. And mm-hmm. it said, are you ready?
No.
"Oh, grace of God, please forgive me and all of the mercy on and have mercy on my eternal soul. My sweet, sweet Corinne had grown completely inconsolable. She had learned to hide her feelings from her friends, but the two of us were lost, alone, and afraid. Corinne just kept on asking, 'Why won't God just let me die?' And we hadn't slept at all, and neither one of us could stop crying when we were together. Please ask my family to take care of my pets. The dogs, Hope and Lucy, should be kept together or put down. There are four cats. Mystic, the black cat, 9 years old. Sassy, the Siamese, 11 years old. Snowflake, Siamese, 11 years old. Reno, brown Abyssinian, 6 years old." So, she wrote briefly about the struggles that she and Krim were having with the loss of their husband and father. And there was another sheet that said, "Please, please, please, no funeral, no memorial, just cremate us both." And
screaming.
There was another one with, like, contact information for relatives. But I have such an issue with this, and I can talk about it all fucking day about how, like, no funeral for your daughter, who you will find out what happened to her briefly, and you have ideas for where your animals need to go, and you're so worried about your dogs being friends that you want to get them put down if they can't be together.
The most she mentioned about her and her daughter was that when they saw each other, they cried, and that was pretty much it, and then goes off and lists their fucking 40 fucking pets, and, like, this is this one, this is this one. These two are best friends. And they have to be together or die. Like, what the fuck?
I know. It's crazy. It's absolutely insane that she, like, no memorial for your 19-year-old daughter. It's unbelievable to me.
Like, that's...
Police found Corinne Peters' body in the laundry room, and a gunshot wound had entered the left side of the back of her neck and exited near her right cheekbone. An autopsy showed that Corinne's attacker was several feet behind her, and she was shot from behind. Corinne's head was wrapped in towels, and police still don't know if it was to cover her face or prevent, like, the mess from, like, spreading or something. In an upstairs bathroom, police find yet another note, and this one is handwritten, "DNR, do not resuscitate," instead of resuscitate, she spelled resuscitate wrong, "under any circumstances, Jane Peters." And I do want to mention this lady, I almost said a different word, this lady, this lady, her house was like Double D's house from Ed, Edd, and Eddy. You know how his parents would label everything?
Yeah.
Like, she had, like, a City Blackberry, City Computers labeled, and, like, a thing. I don't, like, she left, like, 78 obsessive notes. It's crazy. So, inside they found Jane Peters' body with a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the forehead. An autopsy done by Jeffrey Bernard shows that on Jane's body there were two fentanyl patches. And fentanyl, if you don't know what it is a painkiller that's 50 to 100 times stronger than morphine. And it's usually prescribed to patients with chronic pain after major surgeries or cancer patients. And they were, like, on our lower back. Mm-hmm. This is an excerpt from the Dallas Morning News. This is just on the quote from Bernard about the autopsy. It is said that she had those patches on there for a long time, and there was nothing left in there to absorb, Bernard said. Or at least that she put them on right before she shot herself, and the drug didn't have time to absorb, and it wasn't in her bloodstream in a level that we could detect. He said one reason to apply the patches could be to induce an overdose. It would overdose her, and she would go to sleep if the gunshot didn't kill her, he said. I think that it was fucking selfish, and she didn't want to feel any pain. Mm-hmm. But the patches, I think the patches were from her husband. They're, like, saying they don't know where they got them, so I can't, this is, like, just, yeah. like, an alleged idea on my part. But I don't know where you'd get that.
Well, I mean, like, also, she's a city official.
Yeah.
So there could easily, this is all alleged, I'm just making shit up right yeah. now. But, like, corruption and, like, hey, I'm the blah, 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 you want to give me this? And, like, she can use that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, like, they're trying to be nice, and they're saying, like, maybe she was scared that the gunshot wound didn't kill her. She shot herself in the forehead. Yeah, she didn't want it, like, to hurt.
And also, like, backtracking to the daughter thing, because now we can mention, hey, her mom fucking shot her.
It shot her in the back of the head.
So, a lot of times when it's, you know, the person you're killing, you will cover up, like, the face of the person, mm-hmm. so I'm thinking
that's... There's remorse there, yeah. yeah.
And also, if she was, like, obsessively, like, labeling shit, she probably also did it for both reasons, like, so she wouldn't have to see her face, and so it didn't make a mess.
Well, you're about to hear, she did even weirder shit. So, inside of the bathroom with Jane, there was a pillow, a blanket, and a book about coping with suicide, and pictures of her husband and her daughter, Corinne, were, like, put in the pages. But, like... Also, I didn't mention this because I didn't want you to know how weird she was. She put, like, teddy bears outside of the laundry room that Corinne was shot in. And I'm just like, what is that for? I don't know if it means anything. Autopsies would later show that Corinne was killed up to 14 hours before Jane committed suicide.
So homegirl's chilling in this house with her dead daughter.
Yeah, writing all these notes, going ape shit. Like, I don't even know what the fuck. Like, it's insane.
There's a certain level of, like, disassociation you have to have.
I mean, yeah. To be able
to do any of that.
And how premeditated was shooting your daughter for you to spend 14 hours typing notes out on your computer? Yeah. Most of them were typed. Not long after the bodies were found, police got a call from a man named Rob Frank. He was the mayor of Cedar Hill. And he notified them that he thinks that, hey, I think that the gun that was used in that murder-suicide... was my gun. And this is how you guys are about to learn we're from Texas. So it turns out that on July 8th, so this took place, Corinne got killed on the 12th, mm-hmm. and they found them on the 13th. On July 8th, he and Peters practiced shooting with Frank's gun, and she actually returned home with it because she said that she was going to take classes and for a concealed handgun license. And he's like, yeah, you can take it. He, like, familiarized her. He taught her how to load the gun, and they were shooting it together. He had no idea. It's just, like, a thing that, like, is not uncommon here. Like, mm-hmm. if I told my ex-stepdad that I wanted to go shoot guns, he'd be like, all right, let's go. You know, yeah, it's just, like, a thing.
There's no question about it.
Yeah.
It's just such a common thing.
I mean, every other person. It's not this dude's fault, and I just want to make that so clear.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, it's common, so why would he say no?
Yeah, like, and especially if she's like, I'm considering getting my concealed handgun license. Like, that is something that, like, I know people my age who have their concealed yeah. carry. So, it's just crazy. So, Jane was described by friends as a doting, highly organized, and loving mother to her only daughter. That's from the Dallas Morning News. And a city spokesperson said this about Jane's death. It is a tremendous loss, not only from an employee standpoint, but a community standpoint and a personal loss that I'm really just trying to get a hold of right now. Get my arms around it, figure out what has happened, and what to do next. And that quote I pulled from the Daily News. All of these ideas of Jane kind of came crashing down whenever they found what the motive was for this crime. And it turns out that she was in what, like, authorities called acute financial difficulty. After her husband passed away in 2008, the Peters home had been foreclosed on three times. three times since the, like, within the past year, three times within the past year leading up to their deaths. That's a lot.
That's,
yeah. I mean, God, like, that's, like, every 4 months you're getting a foreclosure notice.
Yeah, like, jeez. And especially with your daughter, like, going off to college, and that's gonna be just that much more money.
Yeah, I mean, she's in, like, freaking the hell out. Mm-hmm. And so, Jane came under suspicion of a city attorney whenever her city credit card had a charge from a Plano clothing store. And apparently the charges start from November 2009 up to the deaths in July of 2010. So you're like, oh my God, she's embezzling money from the city. Mm-hmm. There were 68 charges. And they were things like pet supplies, restaurants, clothing stores. And this all added up to be $6,300.
That's not...
of money that she was caught embezzling. Which, like, I mean...
It's still
she didn't even embezzle $10,000. She would do some time, but I mean, God.
Yeah, that it honestly sounds like it's little shit.
Yeah, like, except one of the things that was on the city card was rental car charges for a 2011 Hyundai, which was what Corinne's brand new car was.
Oh, bitch. Okay.
So Jane wasn't putting up this, like, facade of being, like, bougie to, like, just her coworkers and friends, but to, like, her own daughter. Yeah, Corinne, like, was like, I'm going to school. Hell yeah. Brand new car. Deuces. And Jane Peters never bought the car for her daughter. Jane Peters never planned on buying a car for her daughter because this was a premeditated crime, and that's just how I feel about it. I think it's obvious it's premeditated.
Yeah. How does it say when she got the rental car?
I didn't get a date on that.
Okay. Well, obviously, she got it before she even gave it to her daughter. Yeah. So that immediately is premeditated. Well, like, that's what Mark said in my head.
Well, yeah. And her friends are like, no, Corinne said that was her car. Corinne thought that was her car.
If you're going to lie to your daughter about, hey, this is your car that you're going to take to college.
To Austin, which is, I think, a 4 or 5 hour drive.
Yeah, it's about 4 hours.
I mean... So,
Jesus.
Yeah, she never planned on buying the daughter the car. And when police looked deeper into Corinne and Jane's life, they also found that at UT Austin, nor Corinne's second choice school, TCU, they'd never even received applications from her. And friends say that it was in Jane's character to kind of take care of those things for Corinne because she was kind of like...
She was obsessed, like, obsessive about...
Yeah,
like,
she's... Just- Yeah. Overbearing, typical overbearing mother behavior. I don't think that's that
but
unusual.
But this, I think, it definitely crosses.
Yeah, of course. And so, friends say that it was in Jane's character to take care of these things, and, like, friends and authorities really think that Corinne thought that she was going to UT Austin that day. I mean, there's no other way. I mean...
And she's loading up a van and shit, ready to
Her car.
Well, her car. But, like, still, in my head, it's a minivan.
Yeah, I know.
I don't even know what that car looks like.
It's a sedan.
I know cars, guys.
Well, I thought that, like, because, like, you usually drive a minivan.
I love my van. No, but, like, the amount of effort to go through, even just getting a rental car is fucking annoying. But to go through and, like, type out and print and do this whole presentation of, like, fake college acceptance letters.
Yeah, I didn't even think about a fake college acceptance letter. Yeah. She had to have gotten one to think that she was going.
I mean, it could have
been... Fake orientation notices.
Like, even, like, if it was an email or whatever, there's... if it was written or typed or whatever, there's still, like, the amount of, like, essentially graphic design to styling the letter.
Yeah.
If you're doing the notices about orientation... I keep hitting the table.
Yeah.
If you do, like, the notices for invitation, either on an email or, like, as an actual physical letter, you still gotta go through, like, designing the paper.
Putting the header on that shit.
That's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, and, like, oh my God. And, like, I've seen some college acceptance letters, like, on Snapchat, like, where they have confetti in them. Like, she probably even stuffed that shit with confetti. Like, okay, that's all alleged. But, I mean, come on. That's just, in my head, the drama plays out.
Yeah, I feel like she's just extra.
Yeah, so, Corinne totally trusted her mom and thought that her mom had everything handled. So police also decided to look into the cancer allegation because she had been waiting results from MD Anderson, and she had no signs of cancer, and she was just stalling, so Corinne didn't have to go to orientation sooner.
Do you think that... Because her daughter obviously is, like, aware, hey, my mom had cancer. Do you think she made, like, fake medical shit, too?
There weren't any reports of that, and that's all I can really say about it. But she was playing it up.
If she's playing it that much, like, I've, like, even if my mom or whatever, she's been, like, sick or whatever, you see, like, the medical papers just lying the fuck around. Like,
yeah.
This is alleged, but I feel like she probably would have done that, too.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, this is upsetting.
So I'm going to go back and I have a very long rant. Please. So I want to go back to the timeline because I want to know what Jane was doing for 14 hours before she finally killed herself after she killed Corinne. And police think that shortly after Corinne was seen loading her car and like going back into the rental, going back into the home, that she was shot by her mom. I left something out about the timeline because I kind of wanted the rental car to be a little surprise. Mm-hmm. Jane was seen unloading the car around like 6:30 in the morning. I don't know if you remember that.
Early. Huh? That's early.
I know. That's what time Corinne was heading out because she had to get to orientation in the morning. Mm-hmm. Presumably, Corinne was shot in that 30-minute window between the two of them being seen at the car. So within minutes of her shooting her own child, Jane called Avis, which is the rental car company. Mm-hmm. And the owner didn't pick up. I don't know why the owner was there, so I'm assuming it was a franchise. The owner didn't pick up because he wasn't there. But by the time he got to the Avis at 7 in the morning, the car was already dropped off.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a tight. She shot Corinne, got in the car.
Took the car.
And presumably just drove it straight to the Avis because it was there by 7. So then, like, I'm kind of confused about this, and I don't know if it's a nosy neighbors thing, but like, I don't know how she was seen at 10 a.m. letting the dogs out. And then she was seen on, I think, MacArthur, because I feel like she would have walked back home. I mean, who was going to pick her up? And no, if anyone had picked her up, no one came forward.
Yeah. Like,
and this is 2010. So I think it's before Uber. So I don't know. It's probably not that deep.
She probably just like,
or she was just going apeshit and walking around.
Probably like, just hauled ass back.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a 2-hour window to walk back, but I want to know what she was doing walking around.
Was she literally just walking back or did she do anything else?
Yeah. And so there's just nothing there. People don't really, there's a really vague, really loose timeline here. Because of the charges to Jane's city credit card, it was announced on July 23rd that the city was going to look into, the inappropriate charges on Jane's card and the money that to pay for it was going to come out of her estate. So, thus victimizing her family again. Like, taking that money from them for their burial. And so, an anonymous donor came to the titty... To the titty!
Oh my god, that's staying in there. Anonymous titty donor.
Oh, no. Okay. That was so serious, too. This part's so good. Okay. An anonymous donor came to the city town center that same day that they announced that the state was going to be paying for that and donated $10,000 in cash and to cover, like, all of the credit card charges.
And that, it was only, like, 6,000 something.
6,300 that they could prove.
Yeah, so they covered it by a bunch.
Yeah. And so, the video of the man donating was quickly recognized by a city staff worker as David Murph, husband of the publisher and editor of the town's weekly newspaper. And her name was Jean Murph. Officials officially denounced that David was the donor, and, like, they announced this publicly, like, to everybody. And it was only hours later that Jean was like, hey, no, it was me. And Murph sent an email out to like all of the other journalists that said the reason the donation was anonymous was for it to be representative of the many people in Coppell who cared about Jane Peters and her family. I have no further comment. Okay. Don't get me wrong. Like, I love that Jean did this. I think that she did a really, really, really great thing from the bottom of
her heart. Especially if the family's already in huge financial
trouble. Yeah. Like,
it's such a genuine, nice thing to do.
Yeah. And so, but I take issue with her being like Jane Peters and her family. What about Corinne? There is nothing I can find about Corinne. Her obituary online is a Dallas Morning News article or Observer article or something. That's just relaying the crime.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing. I had to find out she was in the drill team by pictures of her. She's beautiful. There's tons of pictures of her. This is a time of social media. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't find anything that was
Hey, we need to know more about this girl who had her whole fucking life ahead of her.
19 years old. Yeah. I mean, going to, like, even if her mom did fuck her and, like, this is a fixable problem. Like, mm-hmm. It's never too late to go to school. It's okay. But, like, I can't find anything negative about Jane online, and I'm not looking for a character assassination. Mm-hmm. But I just don't understand. Like, the only slightly negative thing I could find on her was, like, her friends were like, oh, she was kind of an overbearing mom. Like, mm-hmm. It was in her personality to
just be that way.
Yeah, that's and, fun. Like, I'm just like, this is a familial sight. This is Zanku Chicken Murders. This is Chris Watts. Yeah. This is, like, like, this is, like, a thing. This
like,
is...
something had to be there and be wrong for her to make that escalation to kill her only daughter.
Yeah.
Like, something else had to be wrong with her. No one just decides one day to do that without some, like, pre-existing, like, mental health condition or just, like, or, like, even the financial stuff getting, like, something else happens and makes that 10 times worse.
Yeah, or... I don't know. Like, and, like, the things I can find about Corinne is, like, a really small Facebook page, and I'll chalk that up to not having a Facebook page, but there's no remembrance of her. Like, not even an obituary. A proper obituary that I could find. I'm sure that there was one at the joint memorial that they had for Corinne and Jane.
That's...
So I can't say it better than the Dallas Observer writer Jim Schutz. I hope I'm saying his name right. This man is a king. And I'll close with snippets from his article that I liked. And there are some hot takes that I'm not going to totally agree with, but I'll read some of them. Oh, okay. So the Jim Schutz quote that I pulled is, "The only people quoted in the news story who objected the joint rights were the teenage friends of the murder victim, 19-year-old Corinne Peters. No kidding. What's the lesson? Kids, sometimes you have really wonderful parents who are great people and fine members of the community, and they may have to put a cap in your head. Try not to piss us off."
Oh my fuck. I can't. What was that published in?
It was published, like, shortly after.
Like.
He had, like, a follow-up article that was like, fine, I'll leave the case alone whenever you tell me why the fuck it's okay that we're talking. Like,
I love this man.
Yeah, Jim, like, I love the Dallas Observer. Please hire me. Like, Jim Schutz is, like, an angel. And he's always like,
to be able to call it out immediately, be like, hey, no, that's fucked up. I applaud.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's an amazing article. And I just, like, I don't know. It's like, I think that if you're feeling like your only way out is to kill yourself, that you should definitely look into.
You need to get some help.
And there's nothing wrong. Call a suicide helpline.
Yeah, there's, like, absolutely nothing wrong with, like, feeling that way or whatever, but you need to understand that you need help, and that's not a bad thing.
No, it's like, not. And all. I don't even think it's unusual to feel suicidal.
No.
It's so normal. I mean, at least to me and to people, everyone I know, that suicidal ideation is a thing. But if it starts to get to the point where you think you're going to act on it, I mean, shit, if you're even, like, thinking about it, just reach out. There's a suicide text hotline. Like, there are things that you can do. And I think that none of this would have happened if if Jane would have reached out for help.
Oh, yeah.
A lot sooner. Mm-hmm. If she, like, she was embezzling money, sure, she would have had to do some time, but, like, with how much the community liked her, do you know how many good character witnesses she would have?
Yeah, she would have, either someone would have put, like, I don't know how it works, but, like, bailed her out or paid off her stuff, like.
Or she could put her house for sale and live in a cheap apartment.
Yeah.
I mean,
she could have gotten help is the bottom line.
Yeah, and it's horrible and sad. And I'm going to drink this boba tea because I don't have to tell a story anymore.
All right. Well, I have a story.
Tell me a story.
I will tell you a story. I don't know where to begin, but I'll just say that this one is actually kind of popular.
Oh.
I guess. Mine is true crime mixed with some good stuff. It's mainly known as the Devil Made Me Do It trial.
I feel like there are a lot of those.
There are at least 2 in England, but they never made it to court.
Oh.
I had to look that up.
Nice.
Yeah.
Research.
Right. I love research. All right, so we'll just start, and I'm just gonna read my notes. So, in February of 1981 in Brookfield, Connecticut. Connecticut?
I love Connecticut. That's
Connecticut,
my favorite state.
Sounds way better, though. In Brookfield, Connecticut.
Connecticut.
Connecticut. Ooh. Alan Bono, who was 40 at the time, was stabbed with a pocket knife by his tenant, Arnie Cheyenne Johnson, which was, like, the first homicide in almost 200 years in this place.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
Oh, my God. It's damn. Like,
specifically, it's, like, 193. But whatever. But he was stabbed by his tenant, and whenever... Cheyenne Johnson, my dude, asked why he did it. He said, the devil made him do it.
I mean, the devil made... Okay.
Yeah. So, the actual murder and court case happened in 1981, but everything, like, the backstory, happened in, like, July of 1980. The actual murder itself, there's a lot that led up to it. Arnie Johnson's fiance, her name is Deborah, she was 26. Oh, and I forgot to mention he is 19.
Oh.
When he did this Stibby stab.
Oh my, that's young.
Yeah, which is weird. But anyway, her name was Deborah, and their family had moved to Brookfield to clean up some, like, rental property. I think they owned it, and they were just living around there in the time. And a short little while after they moved in there, Deborah's little brother started acting, like, super weird. And he was, like, this, stereotypical, like, really good kid. He wouldn't lie. He was just, I mean, he was, like, 11. Yeah, he's 11. So, one of the sources I found said it started when David, who is the little brother, and he's, hello, 11, a baby. He was just either... It looked like he was shoved or just kind of, like, stumbled and fell into their mom's bed by, like, and, like, nothing caused that. There wasn't anything, like, on the floor that he could have stumbled over. He just kind of, like, oh, and, like, fell. So, could you imagine? Just a small child getting launched like, into a bed. Across the room.
I'm sorry, it's not funny.
It's not, but, I mean... Okay.
I'm sorry.
And that's just the beginning of it. Oh, just no. Wait. So when David was asked, like, hey, what happened by his mom, David said he was shoved by an old man with burnt-looking skin.
Freddy Krueger!
Freddy Krueger!
The Kruegenator, if you will.
That sounds kind of cool, actually.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. the name of our podcast isn't cool either. Can you tell who thought of it?
Hey, Corn on the Cob is the best name ever. Can you believe it wasn't taken? Everyone missed out. That's so fucking loud. Anyway.
You should see the waves on that.
Wee! So yeah, he was shoved onto the bed by this old man with burnt-looking skin. Noice. And that was, I found that on, like, the Mysterious Universe. That's one of my sources. Another says that, David started having these really whack nightmares, and he would just wake up just, like, sobbing.
Oh, that's really sad.
And he would say that in his nightmares, he saw a man with big black eyes, a thin face with animal features, and jagged teeth, pointed ears, horns and hooves, and he was called the Beast Man.
Okay, but what were the animal features?
I don't know.
Except for, like, the hooves.
Like, the part of me says it's like the horns and the hooves, but what other is I'm imagining?
I pictured a dog nose.
I'm imagining like a satyr, how they have like the cool like goat nose where it's not, it's just flat.
Oh, yeah. Ew. Could you imagine?
What about like pointed teeth?
Ew. I don't like it. Ew, I got a really, it. Really scary visual of it.
I love it. It's like Krampus.
Yeah.
Oh, old man with the beard. It's fucking Krampus.
It's Krampus. Right. Harlow solved the case.
I solved it. All by myself. Anyway. So, he saw Beast Man. And also, where did I stop? Oh, yeah. It told David in one of his dreams to just beware. I don't know what of, but it said the word beware.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, that happened. And it said, one source said that he, like, because the family had just moved into the place, like, it was like, hey, beware of the place.
Oh, or maybe like, he was trying to be a bro.
Maybe. I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I think if he wanted to be a bro, he'd lose the sharp teeth.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes maybe he's a retired monster and he's just like, hey, beware. And the kid's like, holy fucking shit.
Yeah, and this 11-year-old's like, just like, fuck.
He's like, dude, I don't know what the issue is.
He's retired. It's fine.
No, I'm just kidding. He's a bad... He's called the Beast.
He's the Beast Man, quite literally. So this kind of went on for a while, and eventually David's like entire fucking behavior just changed. He was this like super quiet, nervous kid, and he wasn't one to just make shit up. Okay, so this happened for a while, and David's behavior would change, and he's like regular 11-year-old kid. And then it just kept going for a bit, and he would just get super quiet, not talk, and then just be nervous about like everything.
That's so sad.
Yeah, like 11 years old, you're like, you know what shit is. Like, you're...
Yeah, that's old. I mean, that's not old. Like, he's a little kid.
But, like, you're aware of shit that's happening.
Yeah.
So, to just randomly get these fucking nightmares and be talked to by some fucking beast man in your dreams is whack.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
Like, because you have some level of understanding, like, hey, this isn't normal.
Yeah.
So, stuff just kept getting worse for David. And after a bit, Debbie, who was the girl, or the fiancé, asked Arnie Johnson to come stay with the family just to make everyone feel better.
And Arnie Johnson is going to be our perpetrator.
Yes.
Okay.
Their names are very similar. So yeah. Yes, Arnie Johnson. I'll just say Johnson from now on.
Okay.
But he was asked by Debbie, the fiance, to, hey, come move in with the family just because shit's getting weird. So, you know, that didn't really do anything to help. In fact, David started getting, like, just strange injuries in his sleep that are pretty common with, like, demonic possession. So, like, the bruises, the scratches, and all that.
Like, 3 scratches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there was even more than that. There were sightings of the Beast Man in the daytime, like, when he was awake.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Could you imagine, like, this just being, like, so scared to be asleep at night and like so scared to be alone at night.
So the good thing is that apparently in the daytime he looked way more chill. He looked like an old man with a beard dressed in flannel and jeans.
Oh, so like a hipster dad.
So like a hipster grandpa.
Like he like loves pour over coffee.
I didn't mention animal features, so that's a bonus.
Damn, he's like over in the corner with his flannel on, like making a pour over coffee.
Staring at you, whispering, beware.
And then, like, judging them for, like, putting on Folgers. And he's like, I only use Colombian blend, thanks.
Oh, is something wrong with Folgers?
No. Hipsters are annoying.
Why use Folgers? So on top of seeing the old man in the daytime, there were sounds that would, like, come from the attic. There were slamming doors, footsteps, and voices. It doesn't say what the voices said, but they were existing in the house at this time.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm sorry. Like, people silently judging you. Like, you just hear like, oh, my God, are you really wearing?
Are you going to wear those shoes with that shirt?
That flannel doesn't look good with that other flannel that you have underneath. And he's just like, what?
I want to lose my goddamn mind. Like, shut the fuck up, demons. So, at this point, things have escalated to, from kid having nightmares, to being told shit in nightmares, to seeing the dude in the daylight, to your shit in your house is moving and slamming and you can hear shit walking and talking. So the family went to their church, St. Joseph's, and asked them to bless their house, which, I mean, kudos, good for thinking, but it only made things worse. The sounds got louder. Excuse me. And David had more of those, like, crazy nightmares. And in one of them, or actually multiple times, he would start quoting this book in his sleep.
And it's like, Grapes of Wrath?
No, it was Paradise Lost.
Oh! What's Paradise Lost about?
It's... Okay,
I forgot.
So,
I don't know. I've, like... Isn't it, like, an epic poem or something like that?
It is, actually. Yeah. It's an old... I literally wrote... Oldest Balls book. of poems.
Oh.
And it's about how Adam and Eve got kicked out of Eden, essentially. Oh my. Yeah.
And he's...
He's 11. Like 10.
Oh, he's 11. Yeah. Oh.
I looked it up. I feel like it... In my brain, people just don't write books this far back. But it's 1667.
Jesus Christ.
So it's not one that's, like, in your fucking school curriculum.
Yeah, when did this take place again?
This is in, like, the 80s.
Oh, my God.
Like, literally, like, 81, 80.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so there's no fucking way an 11-year-old make, like, reading that.
No.
So he started quoting that in his sleep, and also had a dream where the demon beast man told him that he was coming for David's soul. So that's definitely an escalation.
Oh my God.
stuff starts, like, getting super intense, and it's obvious that, like, blessing the house didn't work. So the priests of their church got a hold of a couple that they've worked with before. And anyone who's, like, interested in, like, demon stuff, like Amityville or The Conjuring will know this couple's names. But, in case you didn't, the priest asked help from Ed and Lorraine Warren.
The Warrens!
They're pretty cool, but they've got equal amounts of stuff that's like, hey, they've done this really cool thing, but also people hate them.
Yeah, I have recently learned about Warren hate, and I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, people are just not happy for
them. Maybe they kind of suck.
I need to look into it more.
Well, like, and those, like, who aren't familiar with Ed and Lorraine Williams, like...
Warren.
Oh. Warren. Just your neighbors, Ed and Lorraine Williams, you know. They're like I remember them from the Annabelle sign that says absolutely positively do not open on her, like, glass case.
Mm-hmm.
Does Zach Bagans have that?
The glass case?
Yeah, does Zach Bagans have Annabelle?
I don't know.
Stand by.
Yeah, we'll figure that out. We'll Google it. Are you gonna Google it?
Yeah, right now.
Please. So, Ed and Lorraine Warren, they go to interview the family and David, and this is a quote from Lorraine. She said, "While Ed interviewed the boy, I saw a black, misty form next to him, which told me we were dealing with something of negative nature. Soon the child was complaining that invisible hands were choking him,
then
red marks were on him, like, physically, which is also like, hey, demons." So I think it's safe to assume that whatever Lorraine saw was, like, the spirit or demon or whatever it was that was attacking the kid. Does he have it?
I couldn't find out. Oh, and I was okay. Getting lazy. I just said that he touched the doll and, like, people were pissed off about it. And he responded to criticism and then I didn't feel like looking into it.
No, that's fine.
And then I got onto his website and then it was like, do you want to buy tickets? Do you want to buy tickets? Do you want to buy tickets? In that 5-second span. And I was like, I don't.
Sorry, Zach. Bye.
Sorry. Go ahead.
So Lorraine saw that misty thing and it was like the demon or spirit or whatever that was like, I want to say it's attached to David, because at this point it's like only fucking with him.
Oh yeah, I mean it's like obviously an attachment, especially mm-hmm. like I think like one of the biggest signs of demonic attachment is whenever their mood starts to change, yeah, and they get like really withdrawn.
Definitely happen because they feed off that shit.
Yeah.
So after they interviewed the Warrens, performed 4 minor rites of exorcism, which all of them were performed with the family church, St. Joseph's, and, like, 4 priests from there. And that's according to the mother. And during one of those exorcisms, this is another quote, comes from the mother, Judy. She says David would kick, bite, spit, swear, terrible words. And then worst, she said that there were several attempts where, like, he was being, like, strangled and, like, being pulled and, like, powerful forces would flop him rapidly head to toe like a rag doll. And this is a quote from the mom. And she said, I shouldn't laugh.
I'm already laughing because I know what it is and I'm really sorry.
Okay. So he's flip-flopping like a rag doll and like the mom says, and he can't even do a sit-up, she said. He's too fat. Leave the lad alone. Which is super fucking sad. Really funny. But apparently, David had put on, like, a ton of weight during this whole thing.
I was having to mash my nose into my face, so I don't know why that would help me not laugh, but I was like, slay! That's so sad.
Like, especially because this kid has gone through, like, weight gain this entire time that, I don't know the time period, like, how many months it's been exactly, but this kid has gained, like, a lot of weight, which is weird because a lot of exorcisms or pictures you hear, yeah, you see pictures of people just, like, look like skeletons and shit, but this kid gained weight.
That's interesting.
So that's, I don't know, that's just weird.
That is really weird. I think
it's interesting.
Maybe this is, like, the actual first real case of a demon, and demons actually make you fat.
They gotta fatten you up to
cook
you.
And that's why I'm fat, because...
You got a demon.
I got a demon. Fat demon.
Your demon's pretty chill, at least.
I like him.
So, these exorcisms were never approved, and, like, constantly denied by Fathers Nicholas Greco, from the Diocese of Bridgeport, and all of the priests that were involved in the exorcisms wouldn't even comment about it, or were, like, transferred to a different church or something.
Oh.
Like, completely moved.
And I'm sorry, these were, like, priests that were on the exorcism?
Priests that were involved in, like, the four exorcisms that
Jesus
they were going through.
Catholic Church?
Listen.
Was it the Catholic Church? It's not shocking.
Yeah, they were never approved, which, I'm gonna get back to that. So the Warrens said that they did have a friend that worked with Reverend Francis Virgilac. I'm saying his name wrong, I'm sure.
I love that.
And
name.
He was assigned to look into the case by the diocese, but like that's the extent of it. Nothing was ever approved or sent or anything. It was more of they sent in like I essentially like a request. And that this guy was supposed to look at it, and that was it. That's the extent of it. So the exorcisms were never approved by the church or whatever.
But here's the thing. Okay, so I'm listening to you. But the Catholic Church, like, also has a history of being like, we didn't approve that.
Yeah. I think it's because a lot of times in exorcisms, there's just...
death.
An enormous amount of, like... For people who aren't spiritual or whatever, it looks like fucking you're beating
it's
the
torture.
Shit out of these people.
It looks like there's...
It looks like torture.
Yeah, and like, I mean, if like, we know now, I mean, in the 80s, not so much, but we know now, like, schizophrenia is a thing, and people often mistake psychosis with having demons.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. So, and during one of these exorcisms, the Warrens claimed that there were 43 demons that spoke from
Jesus
David.
Christ!
Yeah, 43 demons. And apparently these exorcisms happened within the span of several days. I don't know how true that is. But they happened relatively close to one another. And during, I'm assuming is the last one because it makes sense. Johnson was just tired of it and like was ready for it all to be over. So he pulled the classic move. I'd be like, and he said this. This is a quote. Come into me. I'll fight you! Come into me!
If you speak of Zach Bagans, he will appear.
The Bagans. Here's the thing. So.
The Baconator.
The Baconator. So I had to tell you, and you've heard this, but I love saying it. When they did these exorcisms, there was a chair in the room where the exorcisms happened. And during these exorcisms... and this is like, quote, the chair would rock on its own, levitate, disappear, and then just reappear. And the Warren said that they saw a devil sitting in it, okay?
Was he doing cross stitch?
Is that a hipster thing? I feel like he's like drawing pictures of like mushrooms.
I'm also assuming, I was assuming in my head that it was a rocking chair, because that's...
It is!
Oh,
is it?
Did you? I hope it is. Well, I'm assuming in my head.
I looked at it and it looked like a rock. Yeah, it's an old rocking chair.
That's
it's got
so
those
funny.
Like tie-on cushions and shit.
Yeah, that's
yes.
Like, and I picture like,
yes.
You know, like your grandma like knitting in it.
And it's
I
was an like, old I'm... man. So, Zach Bagans heard of this chair and immediately needed to have it.
Oh my God.
So he bought it for $67,000.
Jesus. Wait. 6, 7, 0, 0, 0.
Yes!
Oh my god!
He paid $67,000 for a rocking chair, that a devil sat in, and that could disappear, and he put it in his haunted museum, but, unfortunately, the exhibit got shut down in May of 2019 because things got a little too intense. A woman allegedly went temporarily blind.
Oh my god.
People who would walk by it just start, like, sobbing uncontrollably.
That chair is just really ugly and I hate it.
It's crying.
It doesn't go with the decor here at all.
It's literally in a hole in the wall. It's just so sad.
That chair just wants to be sat on.
And the most important part is that a socket got just yoinked out of a wall.
Okay, but that was someone walking by.
No, it was the demon. The 43 demons.
Did you, like, oh, fuck. Zach, it just came out.
It's gone.
Hey, Zach. It just came out.
It just did it on its
own. And then he's like, Zach's like, and then the demon chair ripped the socket out of the wall.
So, okay, when exorcisms happen, you always hear about the demons either get moved to a different person or something in the room, like haunted objects and stuff. So my train of thought went to either the exorcism worked and these demons are gone from David, the alleged 43. On the off chance that it didn't, he still got 43 demons, which sucks. But if they did, the demons gotta have somewhere to go. Somehow, in my mind, they don't just vanish. If they do, great. But they could have either gone into the chair, and that would have been legit. Have a legit haunted chair.
And haven't the Lorraines done... Isn't that what Annabelle is? Like, didn't, like, the Lorraines, like, trap a demon?
I honestly wouldn't be surprised. Like, I don't know,
just
actually.
Go in there, and we'll give it to Zach Bagans for $67,000.
So they could have gone into a chair.
Okay.
Or... they could have gone into Johnson.
Oh, and so this is where his defense comes in.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that's where the demons came from. They literally just yoink and moved over.
Okay.
So, back to Arnie being a bitch. That's literally what I wrote.
Arnie Johnson.
Yes, okay. Yes, Johnson. When the last exorcism was over, which it seems that have happened in October of, like, 1980, the crime happened in, like, July of 81. Yes.
Damn.
Yeah. So it's really not that long. So after that last exorcism, the Warrens called the police and said, hey, we want you to keep an eye on Johnson, this guy, because they just had a feeling something bad was going to happen. I don't know if they elaborated or not, but that's the extent of what I found, is that they just called the police and said, hey, something's bad going to happen. Keep an eye on this dude.
Aren't they psychic, right?
I think Lorraine is.
Lorraine is.
Like, yeah, because she's just the one, like, who can see stuff.
Yeah.
So, Judy and Carl, which are the parents of David. I only found the dad's name in, like, one article. His name is Carl. They did do some really good stuff for their kid. Well, I don't know if it was good, but they got him some help. They took him to a doctor and had him checked out. And he was deemed normal with a minimal learning disability. Cool. And then they had him enrolled into a private school for disturbed children.
Okay.
So Arnie and his girlfriend... Wait. Johnson. What?
Why did they put him in a school for disturbed children if he's, like, pretty much fine?
I have no idea. I think it might have been they're still just not sure about the whole demon scenario.
Oh, okay. I was like, that doesn't really...
If stuff kept up and the kid was still acting that way, that was probably the only place they could think of. Because mental health facilities aren't, like...
A thing
for kids in the 80s, I feel like.
Yeah, no, they're not.
So, Johnson and his girlfriend had been living together for a little bit because of all the stuff that went down. So she wanted to move out, and, like, he went with her because they're, like, dating and engaged. So they ended up moving into this apartment rented out by Debbie's boss, who, like, owned the property and worked at the Brookfield Pet Motel. And this is 40-year-old Alan Bono. So up until this point, Johnson has been a relatively good guy. He hasn't had any issues with the law whatsoever. And reminder, he's 19, so he can't get into too much trouble, I feel
like.
Yeah,
not really.
And
this isn't like the 1800s where 19 is 45. Like, yeah. This is the 80s, so 19 is 19.
He's still like he's a teenager.
Yeah.
He hasn't had any problems with the law, but he did drop out of high school to help his mom when she was in a tough spot. So he dropped out, got a job, helped her.
So he's like money. A good guy.
Yeah, so I honestly feel like he's not too bad.
Yeah.
Until this point. So after they moved into their, like, shared apartment, Debbie started to notice that Johnson would just space out, essentially, and just growl at stuff.
Oh, no.
Like, out of nowhere. And he said that he saw the Beast Man.
Oh, okay.
The animal features one. Not the cool old guy in flannel.
Not the pour-over coffee demon.
Yeah. And, like, he would just forget the whole thing immediately after. Like, forget he went into a trance or whatever. And so this happened about 4 times in the 6 months leading up until the murder, the actual murder itself. So, October, November, December, January, February, March, April. Well, a little after October. So, he started getting into a little bit of trouble with the police. I couldn't find out, like, exactly what. But it's nothing major. I don't think it'd be anything like stealing or like...
Was it like a traffic ticket or something like that?
That's what I'm thinking it is. I'm thinking it's probably like a speeding ticket or something. So he started getting into a little bit of trouble, but again, it was nothing weird. But it was weird in the sense that until this point, he hadn't done anything wrong. So, on the actual murder itself happened on February 16th of 1981. So, Arnie Johnson, called in sick to his job to hang out with Debbie, his fiance.
That's a mood.
Yeah. Like, that's a typical thing. His sister, Wanda, was there. I don't know how old she was, but... Debbie's 9-year-old cousin Mary was also there, and like she was there because the school was out for President's Day or something.
Okay.
So all of these kids are just hanging out in the apartment when they get a knock on their door, and it's Alan Bono. So it's
the landlord
and Debbie's boss.
Okay.
Excuse me. So he shows up, it's like, hey guys, let's just go to get some lunch. We'll just go and eat. It's like, okay, sure. That's like a nice thing, I guess.
Yeah.
But he takes them to a bar, which at the time, like...
A bar in the middle of the day?
A bar in the middle of the day, and 2 of these people are underage.
One's nine. And
Johnson is like 19.
But... I know the legal drinking age changed.
I don't know what date it changed. But, like, even... Like
even still, he would still be barely legal.
Like, yeah. Either a year or whatever.
Yeah.
But even still, like, now we know, hey, don't give kids under, like, 21 fucking alcohol.
Yeah, like, holy shit.
So, when they... investigators went to the waitress. She said that she served them 3 carafes of wine to both of the men. So, Alan Bono and Arnie Johnson, they split 3 carafes of red wine.
Oh my god!
Like, I get through half a bottle of wine, and I'm like, whoo, I'm feeling great. But 3? I don't know how much a carafe is. Is that the fancy thing they pour it into?
It's, okay, so a carafe at the restaurant I worked for was a mini carafe for, like, one person, so it held 2 glasses of wine, but...
So, like, 6 glasses of wine.
Usually a carafe is 750 milliliters, so it's 5 5-ounce wine glasses, so 5 glasses of wine in a carafe.
So, 15 glasses of wine.
Jesus
Holy Christ. Fuck, I've never, like... mentally seen how much that is until now.
Yeah.
Holy hell.
That's insane. Like,
fucking. That's like 7 each, essentially.
Yeah.
Goddamn. Okay.
Oh my god.
That's a lot of fucking wine in the middle of the goddamn day.
That's how much coffee I drink at IHOP.
That's a mood. So they finish up their lunch and then head back to the couple's apartment. And Arnie Johnson and Alan start arguing over Debbie. Okay. I don't know what it was about. None of my sources said what it was.
Okay.
So stuff's getting intense, and Debbie tries to get Wanda and Mary out.
Yeah.
Because they don't need to see this. One of them is fucking 9 years old. Let's scoot them out.
It's like a drunk 90-year-old and a drunk 19-year-old.
He's like 40.
Oh, I thought you said 90.
No, 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 no. He's like 40.
Oh.
He's like dad.
Could you imagine if he
this
was
an old ass man?
Sorry.
So Debbie tries to get Wanda and Mary out, and when she does, Alan Bono grabs Mary, who's a 9-year-old, grabs her like by the arm and just does not let go.
Bono grabs her.
Yes.
The landlord
and the boss man grabs the 9-year-old and does not let her leave.
That's not happening.
Yeah. So Debbie is standing between these two men as Wanda is trying to get Alan to leave. And at some point, Johnson just growls, takes out his pocket knife, and stabs Alan over 20 times. I don't know if 20 is the right number. I've heard 10 in some, 20 in others. But regardless, it's a fuck ton.
I know also with, like, multiple stabbing victims, they have, like, issues counting.
Yeah, because it literally just, it rips together.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So, Arnie Johnson stabs Alan Bono 20 times. And then he just leaves. The police find him, like, a little while later, like, 2 miles away. And he just says, "I think I hurt someone." Like, completely fucking out of it. Alan Bono dies a couple hours later in the hospital. Like, one of his wounds was, like, all the way from his stomach to his heart. Just, like, ripped right the fuck open. Yeah. It's intense.
Okay, but like so I'm like thinking about this and I'm like, why is he holding the 9-year-old? Like, why is he...
They weren't even arguing about the 9-year-old anyway.
Yeah, it's just weird that he
you need to keep
maybe
her?
He like wanted to keep her, like he wouldn't do anything if there was a little girl in the room or something.
I
like
have
that.
No idea, but either way, like, it's... There's a lot of things about the events that took place that are very concerning to me.
Hell yeah.
About the landlord and the boss. Like,
yes!
I don't mean to, like, blame the victim.
No.
There are lots of shit that just...
Well, I'm just like, why are you taking out kids? Like, I mean, he didn't deserve to die.
No,
but why are you creepy?
Why are you taking these kids to a bar? Why are you grabbing on to the fucking 9-year-old and not letting go? I don't know.
To me, it sounds like that's what made...
Well, they
Arnie
weren't even
mad.
Arguing about her. Like, that's probably what made him snap.
Yeah.
Because Mary, was it his cousin? Or was it a cousin or a something? I don't know. But anyway, so when this case goes to court, and I give his lawyer some credit, he was trying to play the defense that it was demonic possession, so he did his research. Found 2 cases in England, which neither of them went to actual court. That was it. And of course, he's like, okay, fuck it, we'll try. The judge immediately is like, fuck no, this is not a thing, and shuts it down.
Damn.
So he goes back to the defense of it being self-defense. And eventually, the jury deliberated for 15 hours before declaring Johnson guilty of first-degree manslaughter for 10 to 20 years.
I'm kind of impressed that he didn't get self-defense on that, but I guess the guy was so much older.
But it also, like, he was not being attacked himself either.
Yeah, he just kind of, like, went apeshit.
It's probably the only thing they could think of, honestly. So he was set to serve 10 to 20 years, but he only served 5 of them. And as soon as he got out, he and Debbie got married, and they're still married to this day.
You know,
And that's the whole thing.
I'm not going to lie to you, and I was thinking this throughout the story this time, since I have heard the story before because of our failed recording. At first, I was like, this is bullshit, this is bullshit, this is bullshit. But now I'm kind of like, do something.
Part of me wants to say that if Okay, so this Alan Bono guy, he is 40. Cheyenne John, Arnie Johnson is 19, dating a 26-year-old.
Oh.
That is a thing. Like, I'm not, like, age differences are not even a fucking thing. Like, yeah. They are a thing, but, like, it's not that bad.
Yeah, I mean, and I just think, yeah, I mean, it's not, I can't say
it's a non-issue.
Yeah.
And, like, part of me wants to say that because Alan Bono was, like, her boss and her landlord, Debbie's, that there could have been, like, maybe he was jealous or something. Like, maybe what are you doing with this, like, gross? Younger guy? I have no idea. There's, I
mean,
just...
And they're both obviously under the influence of alcohol. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so under the influence that the reports felt the need to document that. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Like, there's just a lot of stuff that's, like... Why would you take these kids to a bar when two of them are underage?
Yeah.
Maybe not for the 80s, but, like, still.
And I'm also thinking, like, is it really in the middle of the day that this happened? Like, that's just in my head. Yeah, in the middle of the day. And then
I also think that I might have gotten something wrong. They weren't at the apartment, but they were at, like, the animal thing. Like, playing with, like, fucking dogs and shit. Like, I think that's what they were actually doing when the Vosh dude showed up.
And was like,
let's go get a drink. To a bar.
I don't know about that.
I don't know. I'm conflicted about a lot in this case. But that's the whole thing.
But that's Zach Bacon spent $67,000. So I'm in more student loan debt.
I want to know what the most expensive thing he's bought is.
I'm looking it up right now.
I'll see if you can find it first.
I can't type fast.
What is this? Expensive purchase.
Oops, he got the LaBianca house, which arguably could be the... Wait, he bought the LaBianca house?
Oh, that one. He paid... What the fuck?
Yeah, he bought the fucking LaBianca house. It's kind of disgusting.
What's the... Oh, I found that. That's the first one to pop up. How much did he pay for it?
I don't know. It's probably...
Oh, I found it.
Oh, Harley won.
Offered close to one... Oh, my fucking...
1 million?
Yeah, almost 2 million.
Damn.
1.98 million. So, 2 million.
Jesus. Damn, I wish my net worth was on Zach Bagans' level.
Why the fuck would you want that house?
I think he read, like, a small little bit and said that it was, like, a part of history.
Well, it is, but... Okay.
Well, everybody.
I hope you feel enlightened about demons and...
Suicide awareness.
Yeah. Honestly, though, yeah.
So I don't even really know how to close this off except begging you to get onto our social media. We are at the Cobb Pod on Instagram. That's TheCobPod at Instagram. We don't have a Twitter. We do not have a Facebook because neither of us really use those things.
Yeah, I don't use Facebook.
Our podcast website is cornonmacabre.com.
Yeah, we're gonna try to put our audio up as well as our sources and show like notes. Our show notes. They might not be word for word, but it's all of the information that we read off of, so you'll still get the same stuff, probably more.
Yeah,
but yeah.
And then also, if you guys have any suggestions or if you want to advertise with us, please, our Gmail is cornonmacabrepod@gmail.com. and if you guys are listening on iTunes or on Apple or whatever, please download and subscribe to us and leave a comment and a rating, because that's how podcasts get their numbers. So that's really important to us.
Most of the stuff comes from Apple, and then like
Spotify lists are really important too. And those numbers all come from subscribing and liking and downloading. And it's really important to us. Mm-hmm.
If you got friends who like stuff, throw it in their faces. Say, hey, listen to this.
Yeah, please share us. Please. Mm-hmm. We're hopefully going to be available on any,
anything podcast you listening. Can listen to podcasts.
Yeah, on. So you can find us on pretty much anything, and we really appreciate our family and friends coming through and hopefully listening to the whole podcast.
Guys, thanks for listening. I love you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.